Hello, my friend. Welcome to the Business Leadership Today podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tenney. In this podcast, we sit down with successful founders, CEOs, and other senior leaders and ask them about the most important problem they've solved so both you and I can learn innovative, proven approaches to solving the most important problems in business today. My guest today is global entrepreneur and author Lewis Gumpp. Lewis is the former head of CNN Mobile as well as the former VP of Mobile at the Weather Channel. And during his time with these organizations, he was responsible for several innovations within both companies and is responsible for spearheading both the Weather Channel and CNN into becoming two of the most visited mobile destinations in the U.S. Lewis is also the author of a book that is, I think this is a very needed book. It's The Inside Innovator, A Practical Guide to Entrepreneurship. And it's all about a problem that I know so many people can relate to, which is we all hear about these innovative startups, you know, and groups of two or three people coming up with amazing innovations, but it's so hard to innovate inside of a large organization. And this book, The Inside Innovator, is focused entirely on that. How do you innovate inside of a large organization where there's usually a lot of bureaucracy and it's just innovation is usually non-existent. So in this episode, Lewis is going to share about his time as the head of mobile at the Weather Channel. So he was VP of mobile, had P&L responsibilities, so it was a general management position, and he faced what seemed to be an impossible deadline to ship a product. So I hope you're as excited as I am about hearing this story and learning from Lewis Gumpp. Lewis, thanks so much for taking the time to be with me here today on Business Leadership Today.
You're welcome, Matt, and it's great to join you.
All right. So if you don't mind, if you could kick us off by telling us how you got started at the Weather Channel before you ran into this impossible deadline to ship a product, because it was around 2001, right? Right when the internet's starting to take off.
That's exactly right. I joined in 2001. I was focused on the desktop version of weather.com and working on partnership deals with companies like Yahoo and ABC News. And then we had some changes later in that year. And so I picked up responsibility for mobile partnerships, relationships with the wireless carriers, among other things. We already had some people who were working hard on wireless, but it really was living in the shadows of the rest of the business at that time.
So you're almost entirely focused on online business development, right? So how do you start making this move to, what are you doing to grow kind of the online presence for the Weather Channel here as you grow with the organization?
Sure. So weather.com was growing really fast at the time on desktop devices, but the mobile phones were still very limited in their capabilities. The screens were about the size of a postage stamp. We had candy bar phones and flip phones. Right. I don't know if you remember the Motorola Razr, for example, and those sorts of devices in that era. And so what we were trying to do is to figure out how you could have a great experience for people who were using those small devices while we already knew that we were pleasing a lot of people on larger screens. And we started with data, and then we started working on images, both in browsing experiences and also kind of in apps.
Okay. So, I mean, when you first started, there's no idea of like, we're going to create a mobile app, right? Because I mean, I don't even think mobile apps existed in 2001, right?
There weren't many of them. And the ones they were, do you remember Palm Pilots and even Blackberries? They gave it a go and other devices like that. But there was this big debate. And, you know, a lot of, in fact, it's never gone away, but it's app versus browse. And the people who advocate apps basically say, well, you have native code. So if you have native code, then you can build something that works even better and faster and more visually appealing on a device. And people who advocate for browse say, hey, you build once, you serve many, it's easier to serve, it's easier to update. So why don't you do that? And so there was a debate even then. And my experience has been most first-rate media businesses need both.
So you were already growing this online presence, and then you realize that in order to continue to grow and grab market share, you can't just be browsing or to create the best experience. It can't just be a website that's mobile friendly. It's got to be an app. When did you kind of realize you needed to do that?
We realized that pretty quickly, and understanding that was a lot different than being able to deliver it, which was really hard. And what we also figured out is we needed a business model. And at that time, advertising was still several years away from really scaling on mobile devices. And so we figured out that if we built apps, not only could we have a better experience on that generation of phones, but also a certain segment of users who really cared about the weather, either for their leisure or their work, they'd be willing to pay a monthly recurring fee. And that worked well, and it helped us to pay for the development so we could make a business case. And that was our first big financial success, relatively speaking. And we said, oh, wow, we have six figures worth of users who are on our devices and paying us a monthly fee. That sounds pretty good. Maybe we'll invest more. And so, you know, it's one of those things where you test, measure, and learn. We tested a few things, and frankly, they didn't work that great. We had a box full of unused pager sitting in a closet at the Weather Channel. But on the other hand, these apps, once we built them and worked with our partners, they really worked well and customers were happy.
All right. So when was this when you started, you know, realizing that you need to have like a native app on not only because I don't think, I mean, obviously when you started, there was no app store, right? For
no,
the iPhone wasn't even out yet. So the iPhone comes out, what, in 2007, right?
That's exactly right. And before that, by and large, the wireless carriers had marketplaces. And so you could talk with the big wireless carriers, and we did, and we had good relationships with them. And other companies, you know, ESPN, and just go on down the list, they had their various apps, and people could go find those and then order them.
Okay, so iPhone comes out in 2007, and then they announced they're going to have an app store coming out in probably what, 2008 or something like that.
That's exactly right.
Android's got their Google Play Store, whatever the version of it was back then. So you hit this point where you're seeing, man, if we don't have an app for iPhone and their operating system, or one for Android and its operating system, you're going to be probably falling behind to some of your competitors, right? Like what are you seeing in terms of how much market share you could be losing if you don't get an app up pretty quickly in these app stores?
Well, now that's exactly right. And, you know, things changed pretty quickly at that time. Apple really changed the game with the iPhone in 2007 in the US and ushered in the era of the iPhone, which has been going along with some other devices ever since. And but when the device first arrived, it's hard to imagine it now, but it didn't really have apps so much. There was more phones and browsing and whatnot. And then when the App Store arrived a year later, that was really groundbreaking. And for companies like the Weather Channel and other content providers that had already been investing in mobile, it was a natural next step. I think we all realized it was a game changer, but how profoundly different the landscape would look 3 years from now, I think few people really appreciated at the time. But we knew it was a big deal. And we also had some resources because we had had several successes with earlier generations of apps, with mobile video, with text messaging, with browsing. And when this came, we said, oh, this is really important. And at the same time, we had a limited team. We had a willingness to invest, but a limited team, limited capabilities, a brand new app store environment that really nobody out there understood very well. And we had to figure it out on our own and together with others. And so what ended up happening is we said, hey, wait a minute. So the Apple App Store is coming along. That is a massive development effort in a short period of time because we wanted to launch in just a few months. But also, Android was growing at the same time. It had been bought by Google, if memory serves correctly. And so, you know, that was coming along, and we wanted to be active there for people who chose that operating system. Our goal was to be where the people are and make sure that we serve them well. And so we said, wait a minute, we have some resources, but we don't have enough resources to build really one of these apps, but especially two of them. And
all right, so you've got this race to ship a product. You know, you don't know how big the market's going to be, but you know you're going to lose market share if you don't ship these apps. You don't have the resources to build one of them in the deadline that's been set for when you want to be in the store, let alone two. So what are you, what's happening? Like, I mean, what's going through your mind when this is, when you have this deadline imposed and you're going, man, how are we going to accomplish this? Like, what are you thinking?
So one of the thoughts was, thank goodness I'm working with a lot of people who are much smarter than I am. we had assembled a great team. We had people who were technologists, people who were product leaders, people who were meteorologists, people on the biz dev side, marketers, et cetera. So we essentially convened our team and we said, what are we going to do about this? And we pulled together different options, including classic build or buy decisions. You know, in some companies and in some times you want to like assemble the team, do the multi-month process, assess your options, get a strategic review and whatever. We didn't do that in that time frame. We did a similar process that was much abbreviated. And we came up with different options and we said, hey, I know it looks impossible. In fact, there were some people who were telling us there is no way you're going to pull this off. But we thought we could. We didn't know exactly how every step of the way, but we thought we could do it. But one of the things that we were sure about, we had a hard boundary. We didn't have the resources internally to develop both an iPhone app and an Android app and to do all the things that are related to that, from app development to backend to content integration and whatnot. So we ended up essentially forming two teams with pretty strict separation between those two teams. So one of the keys to our success in this eventually, and but look, this got hairy in the middle of it. And we were having debates. It's like, can we do that? Can we do this? This person's the best developer at that thing, but can we use them over there? You know, or, you know, we have strict separation, but then as soon as you say that, there's some, well, this person knows that thing, so pull them over this way. And we have to say, nope. We are going to have strict segmentation of talent for certain projects. We're going to keep focused. We're going to have expertise. And then we had a support team. Again, it came down in a lot of ways to talent. And we got the support of our really amazing technology team to figure out things that had never been done in our environment, especially when you're, you know, producing forecasts for, you know, tens of thousands of locations, both in the U.S. and worldwide. And then we worked with our partners. We worked with the Android team. We worked closely with the Apple team. We had designated leaders for each project and portions of each project. And we had checkpoints along the way. And, you know, we'd have setbacks and we'd think we had the answer to a certain problem. And then we'd test it and it didn't work. And then we had to go back and try it again and it didn't work again. But third or fourth time or whatever it might have been, we finally figured it out. And issue after issue after issue, we addressed until we had working prototypes. It was really exciting in the middle of 2008 to start to see these prototypes coming together, but we still had a long way to go after that to bring it to market.
I'm sure. Yeah, working prototype is usually when you first start realizing all the stuff that's not working, right? That you think should be. So what's at this kind of halfway point where you're, you know, are you feeling like you can hit the deadline, or like what's the state of affairs there at that point? You got the prototypes, you know, how optimistic are you now that you're gonna be able to ship when you want to ship?
Yeah, let's just say it wasn't 100% probability of delivering in the time frame we wanted, and we ended up having several delays along the way, which felt kind of endless at the time, but with the benefit of hindsight, relatively brief. You know, we had people, I don't know if we were sleeping on floors in the office, but we had people who were pulling some really long hours. Remote working was much less common at the time. And so we had a lot of people who were coming into the office early, leaving late, you know, having multiple discussions in a day to discuss progress and then work onto the next thing, having teams that were essentially going into seclusion to work on their own. And then coming back out to share things when they could, because some of the aspects of these projects were highly confidential, you know, not just for us, but also for our partners, because, again, it was leading edge stuff that few people had even had exposure to at that time. And so, you know, you get to a point where people are tired and you question, are we really going to pull this off? Is the app even going to work? But then over time, you started to see more proof points. You started to see more aspects of the project working. You started seeing the technical back end working. You know, you might have had some tension within the team at times, But at the same, during the same process, you saw people coming together in really amazing ways. So it's like, whatever it takes, this is about us serving our customer. It's not about any one part. And so even if your expertise is in one functional area, if somebody else in another functional area needs to figure out something, delivering something related to a weather map, for example, then you'd allocate people to just brainstorm, figure it out, and keep on moving. And then the thing that I recall from this time is how we had multiple discrete teams, but also this amazing pull together sort of experience to say, we're going to deliver one of the best apps that has ever appeared on the App Store. We were all excited. And then we got to official testing with our partners. And on both platforms, we still had a way to go.
So a bit of a letdown there.
But it was like we were impatient. We wanted to go. We wanted to be in the marketplace. And oh, by the way, this was not without pressure from people with really impressive titles inside the organization who were basically saying, hey, when's the app going to be delivered? So you have pressure coming from all sides. Or at least many sides. You have pressure coming from within the team in various functional areas. You have pressure coming from people who don't have nominal responsibility for mobile, but they're eager for that for various reasons. You have pressure coming from the partners to deliver. And we're all kind of in the middle of this pressure cooker saying, we have a mission. Our mission is to deliver great apps. As soon as we believe we have a great app and it passes testing, we're going to roll that out into the marketplace and try to reach as many people as we can. And then in late 2008, in October, November, we rolled out both the Android app and the iPhone app nearly miraculously within a few weeks of each other. And after we did, there was a tremendous market response. And a number of people looked at these products and they said, essentially, these show the power of what can happen in an app store. And these apps in both cases became some of the most downloaded apps of all time. So all that hard work and all that pressure and this really talented and multidisciplinary team, it came together to deliver something that has stood the test of time. And even today, I run into people and they know a little bit about my background or some people that I've worked with. And they say, you know, I still use the Weather Channel app every day.
As I'm sure roughly half the country probably does, or some variation of it. Yeah. Cool. All right. So if you were maybe to distill, I know there's quite a few principles that you address in the book, The Inside Innovator. And I'm sure some of those principles at least came out of this experience with shipping these apps for the Weather Channel. You know, if you were to, let's go through a couple principles that you think really made the difference and allowed you to hit, maybe not as early as you wanted to, but to hit what seemed to be an impossible deadline of shipping two apps when you didn't even have the resources to ship one in the deadline that you were trying to hit. And you know, maybe we can hit two of them, maybe three, but it's not a huge issue as to how many we get to, but I'd like to at least cover a few of the learning points that you think are really critical to helping people innovate inside of an organization that's already got, you know, a long-standing structure, and there's probably bureaucracy, and there's a lot of things to deal with that a startup doesn't have to deal with.
Sure.
So what would you say is let's start with the most important. So what do you think is the most important element to creating the conditions for entrepreneurship, creating the conditions for an already large organization to be able to innovate and potentially, you know, go to market before a little startup beats them there?
That's right. Well, for better or for worse, there are multiple factors that enable a company to consistently innovate over time. However, if I'm answering for just one, it's the team. Over and over and over and over again, it's the team. And that was true in that case. And one of the things I want to emphasize here is I was with the Weather Channel at that time when we launched the app. But since then, there have been generations of people at the Weather Channel since I left who've done an amazing job rolling out successive generations, which I want to get to as a second point related to building the foundation. But with the team, it's having people who have the requisite skills, but also complementary skills. We had spent a lot of time building the culture of the team. and an environment where we knew that it was important to support each other. And we knew it was important not only to build something that worked for mobile devices, but also something that complemented the rest of the brand. This is something that not everybody who's building a business needs to worry about. But if you are an entrepreneur and you're working within a larger organization with a common brand like the Weather Channel, one of the most trusted brands in the world, then it's very important that whatever we do is accretive to the brand. And what, you know, when we show up in the marketplace, it's a really positive experience and it complements the other platforms and people that others see. But at the end of the day, number one is build a team that is highly functional, that has common values and different capabilities so that you can make things happen. And of course, in this sort of fast moving environment, you need it to be flexible. The second thing that I would bring up, and it goes back to how we started this conversation, growth is not linear. And I think humans sometimes like to assume, well, you just go from point A to point B to point C. It's like, you know, it's like watching a ball roll down a street and it just goes at a certain speed and maybe it speeds up or down a little bit. But the thing that happens with these kinds of businesses is you can work for years. In the case of the Weather Channel, we've worked for 7+ years at building, block after block, or capability after capability, or product after product, none of which was as big of a breakthrough as these apps. These apps changed the nature of the business with a multiple. And so, for people who really aspire to accomplish great things, it's important to remember that you can feel like you're rolling up your sleeves, you're working so hard, you don't see as much progress as you want. But if you're on the right track, if you have a sound strategy, a vision, the right people, you do that for a while, you increase your probability a lot that you can have a breakthrough moment, or as Jim Collins refers to it, you know, the flywheel really starts going.
Right. So what are some things that you think leaders can do to, you know, let's say you're kind of chugging along and you're just not really having the breakthrough, you know, like in your case, I mean, you were at the Weather Channel for 5.5 years, let's say maybe 6, and you're just making these minor improvements, right? Where you're gradually building the online sector of the business, starting to get some interaction with people on mobile, but nothing's really moving the needle huge. I mean, you get to a point where you got a couple million people using the Weather Channel on mobile. But then, I mean, once you got these apps, I mean, you get into tens of millions in months, right? So this is a huge, huge moving the needle moment. So what do you suggest to kind of to increase the chances, I guess, in addition to just being patient, you know, what can leaders be doing to be drawing out these huge opportunities that they can take advantage of?
Sure. So one of the starting places, if you're an entrepreneur, and this comes up in my book several times as I interviewed folks, it's very important to understand the strategy of the company. Because if you want to be successful in securing investment and resources, then it's important to be building in line with where your company is going and where the industry is going. And in that case, we knew we were. We were confident, for example, that devices were going to gain in capabilities. We were confident that the wireless networks were going to gain in capabilities. We were confident that people would likely go across 3 screens from TV to desktop web to mobile. And it was just that the capabilities weren't there yet. So we had a thoughtful strategy that gave us confidence that it really was a matter of time. The second one is prioritization. We, you know, the steps that you mentioned, in hindsight, they were smaller steps. However, when we went from, you know, basically zero revenue and a very small subscriber base to meaningful 6-figure revenue and hundreds of thousands, or maybe even, you know, 7 figures of users, that felt like a major increase. And so building these blocks over time is really helpful, but we didn't do that by doing everything all at once. We made a strategic choice, and this was in 2001, 2002, 2003. We said, we're going to focus on apps And we're going to do that to the exclusion of most other things that require a lot of development. For example, mobile web, which we basically just put on the back burner. And once we got to a place where the apps were working, we had more of an opportunity in video than we thought. And at one point, we were making more made for mobile video at the Weather Channel than any other company I know how to find, knew how to find, because we were producing forecasts for many locations around the US and appending that to data. And then we did it with text messaging, and then we came around to mobile web. So by that time, we had a very strong foundation, but we had been prioritizing to the best of our ability. And the last thing that I would mention is probably self-evident, but you got to adapt. We didn't have a crystal ball. We didn't get it all right. We couldn't predict the timing of some platforms. We couldn't predict the size of some platforms, but we knew the general direction. We took a position and we were action oriented. So we adapted, we were action oriented, and we navigated into a place where the Weather Channel has been one of the biggest innovators on the mobile, you know, in the mobile ecosystem for over 20 years.
So it sounds like, you know, what if I were to summarize here, like the keys were, you got to pick a strategy, right? You don't know, like you said, you don't have the crystal ball. You don't know that it's going to be the winner. But once you feel confident enough that that's the direction, you can't be all over the place. You've got to really kind of go all in on the strategy that you do choose. And once you're all in, have the focus to say, well, we can't do everything at once. So we're going to really focus here. And this is where I think there's a point that you mentioned, is that it seems to me like you're really focusing on leverage, right? So you're really focusing on where can we put our resources where we're going to get the highest amount of return in terms of growth of users, the ability to build a business around the user base that we have. And that way, once you have that leverage, that opens up the resources to go and do all the other things that you'd like to do that are on the wish list, right? But if you try to do all of them at once, you would probably never succeed at hitting the most leveraged activity you can do. Is that fair, would you say?
100%. That's exactly right. In fact, you are leading to a critical point. When we pan out on this picture from the example that you and I have focused on and the time period that you and I have focused on, we were actually the beneficiaries of some visionary work that happened long before I started at the Weather Channel. Frank Batten Sr. And others, including Dubby Nguyen and John Coleman, started the Weather Channel and toughed it through some really difficult times just to get the network off the ground. And then it became very successful. And then multiple people, including Deborah Wilson and Paul Ifaldano and others before my time, they built weather.com. And so they built that platform. So we had then the opportunity to grow on mobile, and we were stewards to a certain extent of the brand. And we were fortunate to have had those kinds of leaders before. And I'll say afterwards too. So, you know, we took the baton, we carried it for a while. And since then, it's important to emphasize, I have stayed in touch with multiple people who have been at the company ever since. And they've done an amazing job with the next generation. So I feel like, you know, we're part of a succession because there were core values, a dedication to serving customers, and this idea that, you know, we're going to constantly adapt and evolve.
All right. So I want to go back to the first point you mentioned, which you gave, you know, a very high level explanation of what we need to do to build a team that's going to be highly conducive to innovation inside of a large organization. I want to dig just a little bit deeper on that because I think this is critical, right? So whoever is spearheading the project, it's got to be aligned with company strategy. Otherwise, no one's going to invest in you, right? No one's going to want to give you the resources you need to do anything. So you're aligned with strategy, and then you take the time to really focus on lasering in on your strategy for the project you're working on. Like, what is it that you really want to achieve that's going to get the most leverage? Have the discipline to say, we're not going to work on these other things because we're laser focused. And now, you know, maybe the team isn't where you want it to be, you know, so let's say maybe you don't have the talent that you need in terms of cross-functional or different skill sets that need to be able to function together to bring a project like this together. And, and, as you, I'm sure, are aware, I mean, the labor market's very tight right now, even though it seems like there's this new policy. I don't know where this has come from, where tech companies have now decided they're going to be like everyone else and just do random layoffs from time to time to make their balance sheets look better. But even there, I mean, they're just going to go, no one's unemployed. I mean, they're going to go find a job in 6 weeks or less someplace else. So, you know, the labor market's still tight and it's hard to get people that you need. So what are your suggestions for, I mean, I know that's kind of a broad topic, but you know, just from your experience, like what did you do? Maybe just from your own experience, what did you do to build the team that not only had the skills that you needed, but were really aligned in terms of shared values and a sense of belonging?
You know, I do write about this some in the book. It's so critically important. There's the old saying that culture eats strategy for lunch. And I found it to be true over and over again. I also find that directly in response to your point about recruiting, if you have an open position and you want to find some of the best talent, then not only do you want to find people in the candidate pool who are, looking at the world in a way that's consistent with your values, but also it really helps if other people around are saying, hey, this is a great company, or this is a great person or a group of people to work with. And so essentially practicing those values, establishing them together as a team, and then walking that talk is hugely important. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, it helps to put some points on the board, to have some successes. People who are considering what they're going to do with their career are looking for companies that are going to grow, that they can contribute to. You know, we all want to develop in our own careers, or you know, most of the people that we would hire for the types of positions that we're talking about here, they want to go contribute. They also want to grow and learn. And so providing opportunities for people to use their best talents to contribute to great results, that tends to result in having a bunch of people who are aligned together. And then, you know, one other thing, dare I touch on it, this remote versus in person, but I'll touch on it anyway. You know, there's a big debate going on right now. People can be very effective remotely, and I believe that for a long time. I continue to now. I also want to say that there is no substitute that I've ever found, maybe somebody else has, but no substitute for bringing people together to help build relationships. Mm. So for the relationship building part, you know, whether you have people who are based in the same place or whether they're based in different places, if you can find a way, either, you know, on a regular basis, you know, during the year, or, you know, if you have people who are situated in different places to gather together from time to time, that is tremendously valuable, and especially in the current marketplace.
Awesome. Well, Lewis, this has been a fun conversation, and I did not actually have a chance to read your whole book before we spoke, but I think I'm gonna have to now. So I'm glad we met, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with me here on Business Leadership Today.
You're welcome, and that's a great compliment. I've learned from a lot of other people, and I hope that the book helps people to, you know, achieve more and build the kind of career they'd like to build.
Awesome. Now, for those of you who would like to learn more about Lewis and his work and his book, it's pretty easy to find him. You can go to lewisgump.com is his website. It's LOUISGUMP, just like ForrestGump.com. And you can also find him on LinkedIn, same way. And before we sign off, I do want to send a shout out to Caleb West, who produces the podcast for us and does a great job. Thank you, Caleb. And until the next time I have an opportunity to hopefully bring someone who shares some great ideas with you or otherwise help you in some way, I wish you great success building and growing an organization that's making a positive impact on the team members in your organization and on our world at large. Bye for now.